This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On the UAE's number one talk radio station, Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Helen Farmer and great to have you with us. In light of an outbreak of distemper in Dubai, we brought in Dr. Sarah Ramsey, vet at the Umm Sakeem Veterinary Centre, to answer your pet questions and explain just how worried Dubai dog owners need to be. Speaking to a TV and film stuntman, Richard Dwyer, sharing his expertise with kids at his new gymnastic school, Flair. And if you're looking for a personalised travel trip, we spoke to the founder of Woven Travel, a teacher turned travel professional. What are some of her big tips for the summer? And Donata Travel was in the studio with the latest updates on deals for travel, both locally and internationally, and an absolute incredible whirlwind trip of Italy that's all about the food.
You're listening to Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, where the number one ingredient is always high-quality salmon, lamb, turkey and chicken.
Pleasure to have you with us and pleasure to have ProPlan on board as well. We are bringing you the best vets, great information, the latest headlines as well. And joining us live in the studio is Dr. Sarah Ramsey from the Umm Sakeem Veterinary Centre, Senior Veterinary Surgeon and an advanced vet practitioner in small animal medicine. Doctor, thank you for being with us this afternoon. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, you're quite new to the UAE and we haven't had you in the studio before, so I'd love to do a bit of getting to know you. Can I ask, what pets do you have at home?
So we have a rescue Bedlington Whippet called Snow. We've had her for 4 years. And then we brought her and two cats over from the UK. So Dexter, who I've had for 16 years, he was a little stray that was brought to my first practice.
Goodness.
And Atty, who was also a pandemic sort of surrender. And then since arriving here, we've had a lovely Arabian Mao who just decided he was going to come and live with us and thankfully gets on very well with the other cats. And then he's told all his friends. So now we have three other garden cats who come and I've had them neutered and vaccinated and we look after them as well.
They know they're onto a good thing. They're like, she's got the best food. She's going to fix you up. She's going to look after you. Soft touch, Dr. Sarah.
Definitely.
Thank you for including the names because honestly, it's one of my favourite things when people message in. I love knowing what people call their pets. I find it fascinating. Bonus points for being human names.
Yes.
I love it. What's been coming into clinic recently?
Obviously, the sort of big worry for everybody, as you were mentioning earlier, is distemper. So we're seeing, thankfully, a lot of people are coming with concerns about their animals showing respiratory or sort of ocular eye signs and being concerned. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, the majority of those have not been distemper. At Umm Sakeem, we sort of tend to mainly specialise in with dogs and cats. We do have some small furries and the occasional exotic and bird, but it's predominantly sort of dogs and cats that we see, but of all shapes and sizes. So.
Well, you'll get it all through the doors in Dubai. I'll tell you what, I saw a monkey on the beach track the other day. So just watch this space. Let's talk distemper because veterinary surgeons across the UAE are urging dog owners to investigate this, keep an eye on symptoms and not to socialise as well. This is Rebecca talking about her experience.
I had to have my dogs vaccine-checked to make sure that they have the antibodies for distemper in order to continue taking them to my local dog park or boarding kennels. And both of them failed. And I'm very surprised because over the years they've had their jabs every year on time without fail. And I would have thought they would have built up immunity. So either there's a problem with the checks for the antibodies, or is it there's a problem with the vaccines that we are supposedly giving our dogs each year? I'm really concerned about that.
Let's break it down, Dr. Sarah. What exactly is distemper?
So distemper is a virus. It's very similar to the same family of other viruses we see out there, like rinderpest in other animals. It is one of the sort of common things that we vaccinate against every year. So it's in your usual sort of booster. In the United Kingdom, we tend to only vaccinate every 3 years against distemper because cases are very low. In 20 years of working in the UK, I never saw one case.
Oh, wow.
Since coming to the UAE, it's always been here. It has never not been a problem here, which is why we recommend yearly vaccinations. But obviously, recently, there has been a large increase in the incidences that we're seeing. And unfortunately, this sort of strain, and when there are outbreaks like this, which occurs worldwide, they do tend to be slightly more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And instead of the traditional sort of respiratory and eye signs that we see, this virus is very rapidly leading to neurological signs. And unfortunately, most of the time when neurological signs start, it is very hard to save those patients.
So Dr. Sarah, do we know, or what can we point to as being a cause for this most recent outbreak?
We don't know of a definitive cause. We are now being urged to report cases. So vets across the world are being urged to report cases. So we are logging the vaccines those animals have had. So we're trying to look for a common cause. Is it a particular type of vaccine, a different manufacturer or a batch? Has there been a breakdown in the storage or anything like that? At the moment, that we're just collecting data, so we don't know. Predominantly, the patients, unfortunately, that we have seen at our clinic have been puppies. So they've been under a year old. So they have not been those older patients that have had, numerous booster vaccines. Again, most of the ones that we're seeing have maybe not had three puppy vaccines, which we recommend at 8, 12 and 16 weeks of age. Traditionally, we used to finish sort of vaccine courses at 10 or 12 weeks of age. So I definitely would urge listeners, if they have an animal under a year old, just look in their vaccine record and check whether they had three initial inoculations. And if they haven't, to maybe go to their vets and discuss that with them.
So can I ask how it's transmitted then?
Yeah. So it's transmitted by respiratory sort of droplets. It's not a virus that stays in the environment for a long time. So the best way to catch it is sharing airspace. But having said that, we obviously live in a country that we have a nice climate. So things will stay in the environment slightly longer than they would in a cold or wet environment. So it is possible to catch it sort of out if a dog has coughed and brought up sputum, and then your dog goes along and sniffs where that other dog has been. That is a possible, sort of route of transmission. But the best way to catch it is obviously sharing airspace and droplets.
You mentioned there that the majority of cases that have been recognised here have been in younger dogs, that kind of under the year age area. Do we know anything else about breeds that might be particularly susceptible, especially for respiratory things? Do we know anything about, short snouts, or is it really just simply traits to do with age and what's in their system or not, as the case may be?
Yes, I mean, the cases again that we've seen have all been different shapes and sizes of dogs. So it's not been that it's been like small dogs or flat faced brachycephalic breeds. They've been, really varied. They've been pure breeds, crossbreeds, a whole mixture. Again, in the UK, lots of testing has shown that immunity normally lasts sort of more than 3 years. But, breaks in protection will occur if you're stressed or diseased or immunocompromised. So if you're just a little bit under the weather when you had that booster, you might not have produced enough antibodies, or as you age, your immune system just isn't as good, so you don't produce enough. So, definitely, again, animals that we've been checking, doing these vaccine checks on, we have been picking up on a few that haven't had as high a titer level as we would like, and we've been advising those people to have a booster to improve immunity. But even having the vaccine check or a booster isn't still, certain it means your dog won't contract it. The only way to really know if you're going to get it is to be challenged by it and survive it. Mm-hmm. And that's the very hard thing to explain to patients and clients.
So people, please do be cautious when it comes to socialising with your animals. I know there's a lot of holidays coming up, so boarding, making sure you're getting your checks done before your animals are spending time with others outside the home. And we have mentioned the testing there. There is a global shortage of the tests. I understand some are going to be back in the UAE end of this month. So maybe give a quick call to your vet and get on that waiting list. You can go in and get the peace of mind that you need.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan. Groundbreaking science, life-changing nutrition.
Dr. Sarah Ramsey is in the studio from Umskeen Veterinary Centre. She's a senior veterinary surgeon. Dr. Sarah, we got a very cute photo of Leo the cat. Leo is 8 months old. And how do you describe a little special tooth he has?
Yes, so the caller sort of had mentioned that he was born with his jaws weren't meeting correctly. So when that happens, obviously the skull should line up so that the teeth are opposed and they can catch touch things and hold things and things like that. And obviously, sometimes during growth, the mandible or the maxilla, the top jaw or the bottom jaw doesn't grow in the way that it should do, and therefore the teeth don't meet. And the problem that can then have, and that's what's happening here with this little boy, is that his tooth is then getting caught on his lip. Now, that can sometimes lead to getting sort of cuts and everything on the lip that then can lead to sort of secondary infections, and can also sometimes be quite painful because they can sort of catch it accidentally. So he is fully grown now, so it's not really going to change. So sometimes when they're very little kittens and or puppies, we just wait and see how the jaw grows. Obviously, if this was a human, you'd have braces and things like that. Veterinary dental specialists do things like that. But often with these big canine teeth, sometimes the kindest thing is to actually sort of remove it if it's causing a problem. If it's not, I just think it looks very cute, actually, in
so
his picture.
Cute. Leo, you are a handsome boy indeed. So as you're saying, have a chat with the vet about if it is causing any complications, any kind of abrasions or ulcers or infections.
Yes, they'll be able to have a better look inside the mouth and see, because again, sort of sometimes it looks okay from the outside, but sometimes you'll actually see that there's some rubbing on the hard palate or on the inside of the lip or the gum.
What would you do if Leo was yours?
Again, if it wasn't causing him any problems, I'd probably leave it. But if he was starting to continually bite his lip or have an infection in there, then I would remove that tooth.
Thanks, Dr. Sarah. Any questions, do get in touch. We've got a Frenchie who's lost his mojo. 7 years old, sleeps most of the day, but has recently had two fits where he was shaking and frothing at the mouth for about 2 minutes. Epilepsy, what can I do, please?
So seizures, there can be sort of numerous causes for that. So you can have intracranial reasons, so that's epilepsy or cysts or lesions in the brains, even tumours. Or you can have extracranial reasons, so that can be problems with your liver or your kidneys or your electrolytes and things. So I definitely would recommend a vet check. The first thing they would do would be to take some blood and check all their internal organs and their electrolytes. If that's all normal and the seizures are continuing, then probably an MRI scan is the next best step to make sure there's not a structural problem with the brain that's causing it. If there is, sort of no structural sort of damage and things, then it probably is epilepsy, and that can be well controlled with anti-epilepsy medication.
Really hope that helps. All the best to you, little Frenchie. Now, regular listeners will know that last week I was the proud temporary owner of a tiny cat who we initially called Tiny, and then we called him Chili because he was very spicy in that I had to wear a gardening glove whenever I went near him. He's now just the most adorable little creature, and I can't keep him because I've got allergies and we've got two dogs, but we have found a home for him. So this next message has kind of hit me in a way that I wouldn't have expected as a traditional dog person. Message here saying, I had three cats, but one was adopted 2 days ago. Her new family says she's not eating, seems scared and is hiding and isolating. Is this normal or should I take her back? How long will it take for her to adjust? And is there any way to help her feel safe and happy in her new home? Feeling super guilty for separating her from two other cats.
So yeah, this is quite a common, problem that we'll come across and often called about at the vets. And obviously it's a massive change to go from moving from a house that you've been in with your siblings or other cats that you've grown up with and sort of moving to a new environment with different animals and different people. So the most important thing is to try to keep as many things as the same. So the same food, if they can go with bowls and blankets and things that sort of smell familiar, that can help too. There's also some really good plug-ins with synthetic feline pheromones that, again, also help them relax and put nice positive vibes. And just being sort of, really gentle and patient and quiet. If there's other cats in that house they need introductions to, that can take a little bit longer and that needs a little bit more work. The ISFM, so the International Society of Feline Medicine, have some brilliant resources on their website about introducing cats to new homes and helping cats and kittens settle in. So I'd probably, have a read of those first. And again, then speak with your vet who'd seen them before, and I'm sure they'll be able to give you some pointers.
It sounds like, the fact that this new owner's reached out to explain what's going on seems like it's already a good pet, parent,
and,
but patience
is
everything.
And just sometimes it just takes a little bit of time. 2 days is so soon. I'd be saying like 2 to 3 weeks really, to sort of settle in. Some will settle much quicker, just like people, some cats are extroverts, some are a little bit introvert. So it'll take time.
Thank you for getting in touch. Really do appreciate it.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
All About Your Animals here. We're joining in the studio by Dr. Sarah Ramsey from Umsakeem Veterinary Centre. She's taking your questions on just about all aspects of health and behaviour when it comes to your pet. We've got a few cat questions for you, Doctor, if you don't mind. This is from Lara saying, my 11-year-old lady cat Rosie is nearing stage 2 kidney disease according to her numbers, but I'm really struggling to get her to take the renal food. Is there a supplement I could add to her regular food, or do you have any advice?
Yeah, so the most important thing for a kidney cat to do is to eat. So the best thing is the renal diets, and the reason why they're good is they have reduced phosphorus in them. So there's many, many studies being shown that the sort of lower protein, lower salt, lower phosphorus levels improves longevity in chronic kidney disease in cats. But the worst thing they can do is not eat anything at all. So I'm always really happy if they'll eat the renal food. I'm still very happy if they'll eat a mixture of things. So quite often I'll just let them to have any kind of wet food because we get a lot of water in with the wet food. And then if they like kibble, to try just some of the kibble biscuits. There's lots of different things on the market now. And a lot of prescription diets, they've really worked on palatability because obviously the things that make the food really tasty, we've kind of taken out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, different companies have worked super hard on making these foods really palatable. So I just try and find one that she likes. The other thing is if all she wants to have is her normal food or home-cooked food, then just feed that. It's just more important that she eats. What we can do then is add in phosphate binders. So that can come in the form of a liquid or a tablet. The liquid is specifically for cats and is kind of chicken-flavoured, so that's quite tasty. There's also a powder that goes on the food. So some people will sprinkle that on the wet food or they'll mix it with a little bit of water and put it in the mouth. Now, I've had some cats do brilliantly on those and we've had their numbers improve massively just on a home-cooked or normal cat food, but with adding in a phosphate binder. So to chat with your vet and see what they have.
Good advice there, Dr. Sarah. Thank you. Message here, no name in it, saying, can you overfeed a cat? We've taken a rescue approximately 6 months old and she cries to be fed within an hour of each meal. We're following vet and packet instructions, reportions, but it isn't touching the sides.
Yes,
can you?
You definitely can overfeed a cat.
I've seen enough fat cats on the internet to know that it's possible.
So, you know, sort of cat feeding is very different to dog feeding. So cats are designed to graze, to have little meals often. So if you think in the wild, they'd go hunting, they'd catch a mouse, they'd eat it, have a sleep, go out again and do that. So it's not like dogs where they're designed to eat, you know, sort of once or twice a day. So it is much better if they are fed little and often throughout the day. And obviously, if you just put a big bowl of biscuits down, most cats, particularly if they are in a multi-cat household or have maybe had a time when they haven't had access to food, so if they're a rescue cat, they will just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. And particularly sort of dry diets are higher in calories, so they can get a lot in before they realise that they're full. So the best thing for cats is actually not feeding from bowls. So that's using puzzle feeders, puzzle balls for them to move around to get the food out. So it slows them down, it keeps them entertained. And lots of the times the cat will be just communicating with you. They'll be crying and they just want attention. So try playing with the cat, try brushing the cat, do something different than feeding. And you'll actually find that it's probably quite happy. It's just actually wanting attention. But when you sort of go, oh, I'll top up the food bowl, it kind of goes, okay, yeah, right, I'll have that.
I love the advice about different feeding methods. Mm-hmm. Really hope that helps. But yeah, you're right. If it's been in an environment where food was scarce or, you know, the next meal, we're not sure where it's coming from, you know, that's hard to unlearn, hard to unpick. So it's a bit of brain psychology and rewiring in your cat's brain. Yeah. Hope that helps. And Petra's saying, does Dr. Sarah have any advice in preventing hairballs? My cat is throwing up nearly every day. It sounds disgusting. Any advice would be appreciated.
Yeah, so daily grooming is the most important. So removing that undercoat. So there are different sort of brushes out there that are better at moving the undercoat. Obviously, some cats don't like being brushed very much. So sometimes we will advise that the coat is clipped if they're having a big problem. Again, there are lots of diets out there on the market that have sort of increased sort of levels of oils and things like that to help the fur ball move through into the poo rather than come up the other way. And there's also, again, different types of medication, so laxapaste and things like that, that again help the fur ball to pass rather than to throw it up. But the best thing is normally a combination of those things. So grooming and diet, really.
Petra, thank you for not sending a video. Genuinely appreciate it. You can send videos, photos, messages, of course, through the WhatsApp, and you need to save that number just to make it super easy. Pop it in your phone, 0487155000. Dima's being in touch saying, I know this will massively vary for each dog, but are there any telltale signs your dog's coming into season? Wondering whether my pup has had a silent one or not. Keep thinking it's almost here, then nothing. She's been a bit sleepy lately and very slightly swollen, but nothing significant.
Yeah, so it's really different from breed to breed. So a lot of the small breeds will come in as early as 5 months of age, and some of the giant breeds of dogs, it will be 18 months before they have their first season. And quite often with the smaller breeds, they will have a very silent heat, so you'll kind of miss it. The best way to tell is a male dog interest, really, more than anything else, because she will smell delightful to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, often you'll have swelling of the vulva. Some female dogs will just only spot a very small amount, or even just keep themselves very clean, so you won't even notice anything. Others, it might look like there's been a massacre in your house, and our rescue dog, that's what we had for 4 weeks. So it wasn't lucky, we love them. Exactly. So it really, really does vary. But, you can go to the vets and have cytology taken of the female reproductive tract, and that can tell us what part of the cycle that they are in. But most of the time, it sounds like she's getting there, but you might be a few weeks off.
And in terms of when they come into seasons, that then determine when neutering can take place?
Yes. So we recommend neutering sort of 3 months after the season finishes, because then everything's nice and quiet in there. The blood vessels are smaller. The uterus isn't as fragile to handle. So it's a quicker surgery for us to perform. It's easier. And therefore, it's a quicker anaesthetic and quicker recovery time for the patient as well.
I've had so many questions. Apologies if we couldn't get to yours this afternoon. I've really loved the photos. G's just sent a picture of Dave, my handsome bulldog, having his own holiday with his friend Samson, proper happy boys. We love seeing your photos and obviously love having brilliant vets in the studio such as Dr. Sarah Ramsey. If you didn't get to your message today, you can find it at the Umpskeen Veterinary Centre. And we're back, Pets and Vets, with ProPlan every single Wednesday afternoon between 4 and 5. Sarah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Going to let you get back to your own menagerie.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
I am so interested to speak to our next guest because I feel like stuntman is one of those jobs that, who actually does that? They might have it as a kid on that, when I grow up, I want to be a stuntman list, but to actually make it your reality, it's a rare thing. So that's who we're speaking to now. Richard Dwyer is also the CEO of Flair Gymnastics, and he has been involved in all sorts of amazing projects. He was body double for Jason Momoa in Game of Thrones, was in Sherlock Holmes, Harry Potter, Bollywood movies too, and he's joining us on the line now after having a bit of a boogie to Lionel Richie. Don't think it went unnoticed, sir. How are you, Richard?
I'm good, thanks, Helen. Hello.
Well, thank you for being with us. I really want to know about what happens literally behind the scenes about being a stuntman. So first question is, how on earth did you get into this line of work initially?
I fell into it, Helen.
Literally.
No. I did gymnastics, Helen. From the age of 4, I did gymnastics. So my mum took me along to a gymnastics club, me and my brother, when I was 4. He was a couple of years older than me and absolutely fell in love with the sport of gymnastics. And I got very interested in performing arts as a kid. So I was doing theatre at school and theatre clubs. And my mum put me onto a TV agency, and I started doing commercials and TV when I was a teen, and competed in gymnastics as well for the southeast of England. And then I had this, you just said, when I grow up I want to be a stuntman. That's what I wanted to do and wanted to be. So I pursued that and went on to a circus school and did a performing arts diploma in circus. And did a couple of years at the National Circus Academy in London. And following that, I joined the British TV and Film Stunt Register in the UK and started stunting when I was about 20, 21. Started on the movies and TV for stunts.
Wow.
And that was my pathway in.
Travelling the world. Now, how dangerous are we talking about? Are there people before the stunt person gets involved to check out what a move or a scenario might actually involve? Or are you the crash test dummy, quite literally?
Well, sometimes it does feel that way on the body. Sometimes you have a stunt coordinator. So there's a stunt coordinator who works closely with the production team, who makes it nice and safe, and you work closely with them to be safe. But mm-hmm. having the background in gymnastics gives you that ability to be safe and spatially aware when you're literally jumping out of buildings, getting hit by cars, getting set on fire. So yeah, it can get a bit hairy at times.
Looking back, and I do want to talk gymnastics, but I am curious about the onset fun. Is there a memory that really stays with you that you think, wow, that is something I never could have dreamt about doing in a million years?
Yeah, Quite a few, but the first one was being hit by my first car, which sounds really strange, but it's quite a gymnastic skill to do. So we would train that in the gym club. But probably bigger memories that stick out is when you walk onto your first big film set. So I worked on the Harry Potter franchise and the Game of Thrones. And walking onto those sets and seeing them is fantastic, especially when you're new in the industry and you step on and you get to meet some of the big names out there. And it's very exciting, but it does soon become a job. Very used to it.
I'm sure. Well, I always wonder about these things. And this applies to lots of, you know, physical jobs and activities, from being a professional rugby player or even a PT, is what next? What after the chance where your body goes, do you know what, I've kind of had enough of it? And you've turned your love of gymnastics into a business. You've got a gymnastics school in the UK and a second one you've just opened in Dubai, Flair. Tell us, why Dubai? Why did you feel like this was going to be a good place to be kind of spreading your expertise in the world of gymnastics?
Absolutely. So we've got 5 academies that we're running in the UK, and hugely successful pre-pandemic. And during that period, we saw that Dubai was open for business. I was really impressed with how businesses were still operating safely and efficiently and effectively. So I explored opportunities in Dubai, came across and formed a partnership with Just Play, who operate facilities in Dubai. And we were able to open up an academy over here last summer in Port Rashid, and it's gone from strength to strength, and we're now looking at opening up a second site. So it was just a fantastic opportunity, especially as our businesses literally got turned off overnight in the UK, and we had to explore other avenues. We're back up and running in the UK. Things are going really well. But Dubai really did offer some great opportunities. I was really impressed with how the place operates and the leadership out here, and how involved parents get in the kids club space as well. It's a lovely space to be in.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live on the line is Richard Dwyer, the CEO of Flair Gymnastics, a stuntman and on hand to offer a bit of insights about this as an activity for kids. Richard, a question here that's come in from Raj saying, are you ever too old to start gymnastics? Interesting question.
Great question.
Because my kids, as I said, 5 and 7, and they've been doing gymnastics for a couple of years. I don't think they're listening, so I can say this. They're not amazing, but they really enjoy it, which I think is honestly, I want them to be active. I want them to have fun. If they develop some skills and get, you know, if they can do handstands and cartwheels on the beach with their mates, I'm happy, to be truthful. But for adults, can you be on the older side as a gymnast, or do you really need to start as a kid?
I think you can get into any sport at any age. I think it's really important to recognise that gymnastics is building the character of a child. So our whole company is set up to build confident kids, and that's what we're about, from participation level all the way through to competitions. So as an adult, absolutely, and we offer some adult classes in Port Rashid, so come along to our adult sessions, and they're really fun, from total beginner to those that are former gymnasts or are training in shows. We get a lot of people in the UK that are training to become stunt people that want to come in, brush up on their gymnastics. They may have done it when they were younger. They've got to do that qualification to get onto the stunt register. But it's very important, I think, to recognize that when the kids get involved, we are building their character using gymnastics as the tool, and confidence is really key on what we're doing down at Flair.
So tell us then, I understand you've got a British coaching team. Can you talk to us about that kind of recruitment and the people you look for? Because there are some moves that could potentially be dangerous if these kids aren't in the right hands.
Yeah, absolutely. We run a completely British syllabus, British safety standards, British safeguarding, and we have highly qualified British gymnastics coaches. So we recruit from the UK mainly, but coaches are working all over. We also have a lot of in-house training and development that we do with our coaches to make sure they are safe. Safety is number one with us, and it's a very progressive syllabus that we operate. So the children are learning in a safe environment. And we are actually going to be recruiting in a couple of months' time for our summer camps, because we have a big interest in people wanting to come and do gymnastics with us through the summer. So we are building our team. But we've got some very qualified coaches. Dylan is a former British champion tumbler. And Sophie, one of our coaches, helped choreograph Amy Tinkler Olympian floor routines. Wow. So she's a very, very qualified team in Port Rashid.
Here's a question for you. And I know we're talking gymnastics and not cheerleading, but did you watch Cheer on Netflix about the cheerleading school in America? And what was your take on it?
I think I saw bits of the cheerleading program. Is that the one where the mums get very, very involved in the
It's like a junior college. They're all the kind of 16 to 18. But what kind of really stood out to me about it is a lot of these kids were coming from quite disadvantaged or troubled backgrounds. And it was having this focus on a sport that really kind of pulled them together as a team, obviously, in terms of communication, but having a focus of them getting out of a situation, which was just, it really kind of blew my mind. It really, really did. And I'm a firm believer that sports can be amazing, as you're talking about character building, but also having people in your life that, you know, might not be a school teacher or a parent, but a coach that is someone that you can talk to, that you're impressed by, you know, that inspires you. And I feel like that's such a unique position, I guess, in so many ways. Have you had coaches or mentors over the years that have really stood out to you?
Absolutely. I think you're right. Having role models outside of family and school is really important. My coaches, specifically my male coaches in gymnastics, were mentors to me as a child. And I even look back to my my school teachers that coached PE, taught PE in the school, and they got me very involved in sports. So they, you know, had a role model at school and a role model in my gymnastics club. I think it's important for kids to have role models outside of the school and family. Absolutely.
Message is saying, what is the name and location of Richard's gym? It is Flair and down at Port Rashid. Any plans to open a second, third, fourth location in Dubai, Richard? I can see a twinkle in your eye. This probably isn't the first and last here.
I'm in Dubai at the moment, and I've got meetings lined up this week with other locations and areas. But Port Rashid, we're really focused on building Port Rashid. We've got hundreds of children that are doing classes throughout the week and weekends. But we have got our sights on some other locations as well. I would invite parents to jump on online and find us. And then we can stay in touch and tell them when there's other locations as well.
So here's a purely selfish question, because as I said, I've got two kids, the older one in particular. And I think they get into certain kind of friendship groups and all they want to do is handstands and cartwheels and tumble and, you know, just kind of show off what they've been learning in their gymnastic sessions. And I'm very encouraging until the point where I'm like, please don't break your neck. So I'm wondering for any other parents out there in terms of making sure kids are practicing safely, any equipment that can be useful to have at home. So we're not going to A&E anytime soon, please, Richard, because it's aged me considerably, the endless cartwheels.
I think what you've got to recognise, if they're in a good club, that they're being taught the correct foundations, the basics and the right techniques, they're also being told by their coaches not to try things when they don't have sort of floor matting around. Mm. But you could bring some mats in for them to practice outside, I would recommend, rather than inside, because there's lots of furniture around. We actually have an online gym classroom. It's actually thegymclassroom.com, and we have lots of classes from foundation all the way through online as well, that children get involved with. And we do recommend that there's always parental supervision. But I would recommend to any parent. Well, this is the thing. But get them involved. You've done the right thing. They're in a club. They're learning the safe techniques. And when the children do gymnastics, they really are building the foundation for all sports. And they're building their spatial awareness. They're preparing their bodies and their minds. And they're in a good place. I think it's great that they want to show off their learned skills.
It's been actually incredible to see the progress they're making. And I say progress because I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, it was like practice makes perfect. And what I'm trying to drill into my kids is practice makes progress, because, you know, yes. I think it's a bit more realistic. But to see the pride on their face when they might do something something that they couldn't do a few weeks or months ago, to see their friends doing something and think, oh, she can do it, I could have a go at that. And you're coming back there to that kind of character building, that confidence. And I feel like, you know, that can only be a positive thing from my point of view. I want to end with a really interesting question here from Samantha, saying, given the scandal in gymnastics, what are some of the questions you should be asking of a potential club if you're looking to sign up your children? Great question. What kind of, if, whether it's, you know, specific certifications, or you mentioned safeguarding practices there, what should parents be asking if they're looking to enrol their children?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. Qualification of coaches and the syllabus that you follow, and safeguarding practices that you've got in place. It's important to have those conversations when you sign up. Have a look on the websites of the clubs that you are looking at joining and see that they've got policies on display, that there's, you can easily contact the club and that you can get hold of somebody outside of gym hours, either on the phone, through WhatsApp or email. So there's that communication. It's an important relationship that parents need to have, the trust in the coaching team, the trust in the organizations that they're coming into. So communication really is key, and coming in and watching, being allowed to watch the session. So the sessions are open. We got a fantastic Kona coffee house at our place with a lovely viewing gallery where the parents can watch the classes. And also that there's a trial class so that they can come in and try the sport out and see if they like it before they commit. So that's a very important thing. And have a conversation with the coaches when you're at the club and see if you like the club. Some clubs aren't going to be a good fit for some people. You know, there's lots of choices out there. But yeah, have the conversations, make sure there's an open line of communication and that you ask the questions and you get the answers to the questions that you're asking as well.
Richard, before I let you get back to your busy day of potential property hunting, are your stuntman days behind you?
Helen, I retired from stunts 7 years ago. So I did 20 years in TV and film. My full focus is building confident kids through our gymnastics academies.
But if you were going to go back, what film would you want to be in?
Oh gosh, I did get asked to come in onto the latest Fast and Furious stuff with a friend who's the stunt coordinator. So, but I just say no, because my focus really is on giving back to the community, to the kids, and letting them learn what I've learned through gymnastics, which is building confidence and really believing in yourself.
Maybe the next generation of stunt men and women then coming up through Flair. If you do want the details, it's flairdubai.com. You can have a nosy there. Richard's saying there, even recruiting. If you want details, by all means, get in touch. I'll be happy to share them. Richard Dwyer, thank you so much. Great to have you in Dubai. Great to have you on the show as well. Take care of yourself, sir. And if you do want Richard's details, drop me a line for 001.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking travel this afternoon. Delighted to be joined by Jay St. John, a former teacher who now is the founder of Woven Travel. Jay, thank you for being with us. I'm very curious about, and I'm using the word journey here in a very purposeful way, about your journey from teacher to kind of travel expert extraordinaire, someone who puts together packages and offers some inspiration, I guess, for other people traveling the world based on your own passion for travel. Why and when did you decide that you wanted to change careers?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Helen. Lovely to speak with you. I think I am a lot like a lot of partners, and in particular women, in that, you know, many years ago, I kind of jumped at an opportunity to follow my husband's career overseas. And so that sort of led me away from the classroom. And in the beginning, that was just a temporary thing. You know, we were going off on an adventure. And as these things do, as many of us here know, it carries on and we move and keep moving. And then children come along. And so that, you know, kind of continues on. But in the time when I wasn't teaching, I just found myself planning trips for myself, helping friends plan trips. It became, you know, a real passion of mine that started with just this, you know, wanting to take full advantage of this opportunity being overseas and being abroad. And then just kind of spiraled into something that, you know, carried into like a real passion of mine. So that's maybe how I got started traveling.
Now, we're really lucky here in the UAE in terms of where we are. But it is one thing to, you know, enjoy travel for travel's sake and for leisure, but then to turn it into a bit of a business. How is it different to organise trips for other people compared to yourself? Can you talk us through the process of how you work with clients?
Sure. Well, the main part of Woven Travel was actually, I felt like there was a real lack in the industry. You know, there's obviously travel agents, which have been around for ages. Mm-hmm. And then there's people like myself who plan trips, you know, just for ourselves fully from scratch. And it really felt like there was this lack in the industry of someone in the middle of all of that, where, you know, you don't want to hand all of the reins over to someone else. But maybe you don't have enough time, or maybe you're inexperienced in travel. And so you're not really sure what you want to do or how to find the best, mm-hmm. you know, accommodation or whatever. And so to me, I thought there has to be a way to be able to help people and kind of keep them empowered where they keep full control of their trip.
Would a client typically come to you and say, and I'm being selfishly using my own example here, mm-hmm. we want to go to Portugal for 3 weeks and this is our budget, and maybe include a couple of, I don't know, cities or attractions that they want to incorporate, and you would put an itinerary together for them? Is it purely accommodation, or do you look at, you know, how to fill the days as well, Jay?
So basically, there's sort of a wide array of what I can do. The original idea for Woven Travel actually came from more of an a la carte type of service. So, for example, you've come up with your trip to Portugal, and maybe you found a couple of great places to stay, but as the trip is coming closer, you're thinking, I don't know if I've included enough activities for the kids, mm-hmm. but I just don't have enough time to find.
Sounding familiar.
to search out these, you know, experiences that the whole family will like. So then that's when you can contact me and say, Jay, I actually just need help with family-friendly excursions and activities in this location. And so then I go through, you fill out a few questions so I get to know, you know, really about you, your family, your travel style. And then I go with those lenses, you know, just as if you would be doing this yourself, mm-hmm. But using, you know, my experience and expertise, and find, you know, the best of the best that fits what works best for you. That's really like my most important thing is being authentic to the person who is taking the trip, versus I think now we're kind of overwhelmed with information and watching other people do trips, but that doesn't work for everyone.
This is my challenge. I think a lot of people have this too. You might have a destination in mind or even a certain amount of time, and it's that paralysis of choice. And mm-hmm. also, I don't want to make assumptions about other people's marriages, but I'm, you know, often when you've got two people wanting to organise, a bit of a mediator or an external pair of fresh eyes must be quite useful, I would imagine.
Yes.
So I say no more. But it's good to know we're not alone in that. We decided one night, we were like, right, we're going to do one pizza, two laptops, we're going to smash Portugal out in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And we got there in the end, but there were tense moments. So, mm-hmm. so Jay, from a kind of practical point of view, and not to ask too crude a question then, how does it work with bookings and paying for your time? Because presumably some clients will be dead easy and say, actually, that looks brilliant, tick, tick, tick. And someone else will go, okay, there's a tweak here and we were thinking about this and actually we're going to go somewhere completely different. How do you navigate that?
So essentially when you hire me, you're hiring me on a freelance basis. And it's, my pricing is kind of scheduled according to my time. So each booking would be, you know, a couple hours of research, putting together all the information for you, and then some maybe minor adjustments on the back side of things. So what the best part to me about, you know, booking through Woven is that you keep, you know, full control of everything. You get a list of curated, tailored information in which you can go through, you can look up their social media, you can go to their websites. And instead of looking at, you know, 100 hotels, you've got four to look at. Mm-hmm. And then you can go through that and say, okay, well, you know, this one actually feels like the best for me. And then you're free to book that however you like. You know, if mm-hmm. you want to use points because you have some cashback points that you're wanting to use, you can book that way. If you don't actually, if you're thinking, ooh, I've had a big spend month this month and I'm not really ready to book right now, mm-hmm. You can wait and book the next month. It's all, that you know, 100% in your hands.
Right. Let's get some wanderlust going, Jay. Mm-hmm. Where are you excited for people to travel to over the summer or even into next year? Where are some of the destinations that you feel are absolute must-dos at the moment?
Well, personally, just a couple months ago, we went to Kenya. I have two young kids, and I've been dying to take them on safari basically since they were born. And it was the most incredible experience. And I was really shocked. I didn't, you know, even though I travel a lot, I had no idea that it was only a 5-hour flight from Dubai. It's only 1 hour time difference, so it's super easy to do, particularly if you're, you know, traveling with kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those incredible, life-changing trips that you take. You know, as a kid, you've watched The Lion King or you've seen this stuff on TV, and then to be there and to be experiencing it, if you're a parent, to watch your kids, mm-hmm. you know, look at a lion, not in an enclosure or anything like that. It was just really, really incredible. So I think that's a top destination, particularly from the UAE.
We know the pandemic has been hugely upsetting and inconvenient in some ways. And we know the travel industry was hugely disrupted, both, you know, logistically and, of course, financially. Have you seen any different trends in how people are booking or where they're looking to go as a result of now having increased freedoms and, you know, guidelines changing all the time and a lot of countries really welcoming tourists with open arms?
Yes, definitely. I think particularly what I've noticed in just booking travel, even for myself lately, is that many companies are offering so much more flexibility in their bookings. So before, you know, that was kind of, you know, you paid extra for that and oftentimes a lot extra to have a flexible booking. Whereas now I think that, you know, companies have to offer that in some sort of way. And so that's really nice. And I would definitely recommend to anyone who's doing any booking is to be very clear on the cancellation policy, just because if anything the last, you know, couple of years has taught us is that, you know, things come up, things happen, things change, and we're not always in control of all of that. So if you're super clear and, you know, have a great idea of what you can do with your bookings in case the unimaginable happens, that's, you know, paramount. So that's, I think it's a great change, you know, in general, because
I agree. It needed it from mm-hmm. from a very practical point of view to get that consumer confidence yeah. to actually book the flight and get on the plane. Last question, Jay. I'm curious, what are your summer plans?
I am going home to Canada for the first time in 3 years.
Oh, where are you heading?
So excited. Well, our family's from the west, so we'll be across the Saskatchewan doing a lovely trip through the Rocky Mountains.
Well,
pine trees.
Come back with lots of tips. And if anyone does want to, you know, pick your brains, avail of your services, get some inspiration and maybe even an itinerary, what's the best way of getting in touch?
So woventravel.co is the handle for Instagram and also my website. So that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Well, it's wonderful to hear someone who is living and working in an area that they're so passionate about. So thank you for your time. And yeah, you might get an email from me going, I thought I had time to organise this. Turns out I don't. Jay, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live in the studio from Donata Travel is Emily Jenkins. She's on hand with the latest guidelines, some great bargains and some foodie travels too. Very excited to be heading there somewhat virtually. How are you, Emily?
I'm fabulous. Thank you, Helen.
I love it. I'm fabulous. We should say that. Let's go for more fabulous rather than fine. Let's agree. Let's do it.
Let's
get straight into it with the latest travel updates. Any guidelines, any restriction changes we need to know? Let's start close. Oman.
Yeah, so Oman has ended all COVID-19 precautionary measures. So that means on Sunday they announced that from this point on, all travel restrictions have been lifted and all precautionary measures. So you can drive on over there with no issues.
Amazing, because I think that has been a bit of a, I'm not really sure if that's the case, or if you're just going over to, you know, Musandam, for example. Good to know. Thank you. Also, just on this note, Emily, we're just talking off air then about mask wearing, because it does seem to have disappeared somewhat, she said, in the understatement of the year. And there was a question this on Business Breakfast earlier today. So despite what you might be seeing in the mall or out and about, inside it is still the law to wear your mask, and there are still financial penalties, 3,000 dirhams. So just be mindful of that. Let's go to Morocco, somewhere I've only been for one day and would love to spend more time. What have authorities announced when it comes to vaccinated travellers in particular looking to travel there?
Sure. So for Morocco, vaccinated travellers no longer are required to provide a negative PCR test. So any travellers wishing to travel to Morocco must present a valid vaccination certificate or a negative PCR test result less than 72 hours old.
Question we've had a lot on the show recently is about for unvaccinated tourists and where they can travel. This, of course, has been very limited initially, but is changing somewhat, and Spain being the latest example of that. What do we know when it comes to guidelines and making sure you're able to go in there safely, depending on your vaccination status?
Sure. So Spain has eased COVID-19 related entry rules for unvaccinated tourists from outside of the European Union. So until now, travellers from outside the Union could only enter with a proof of vaccination or recovery. However, with this update, it means that visitors from outside the EU will also be allowed to enter Spain with a negative COVID-19 test. So that's a test that has been carried out in the 72 hours prior to departure.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is all about travel this hour. Emily Jenkins joining us from Donata Travel live in the studio. We've just been talking about the latest travel guidelines, some lifting of measures in Spain, in Morocco and Oman, and giving you some ideas of where to go over the summer. Some family-friendly summer breaks. What have you noticed in terms of booking trends and patterns? Where are people opting for at the minute?
It's very varied, which is for the first time in a long time, Maldives isn't necessarily our number one international destination, which it has been for the last couple of years. So I think, a lot of people have really favoured those beach breaks and island escapes and countryside retreats. And we're starting to see more people push back to city holidays.
Ooh, let's talk about city tourism then, because I know you were on a panel recently at the Arabian Travel Market and really discussing this as a trend. What were some of the big takeaways that you were sharing and the equal that you heard from other panel members?
So I think, obviously a big part was that people were feeling a lot more confident about travelling, felt quite confident that a lot of these cities and regions had done a great job with managing the rules and regulations. But we're really seeing that a lot of big events are pulling people back to cities. So that's, sporting events. You've got Formula One coming up in Baku next month. Obviously the FIFA at the end of the year in Qatar, Expo in Dubai. So big events like that. And then we're also seeing people are travelling for other things like gastronomy. We're seeing cruise departures rising. So then obviously we're seeing more people go to places like Barcelona and Venice where these cruise ships depart from. I think just people really getting into that whole city vibe again of good food and lots to see.
Culture, gastronomy. I think music, that's the thing I've kind of really missed. Last time I was in Barcelona, it was for a music festival. I think just so much fun to have that kind of real immersive experience. So some of the top European cities that you're seeing people booking in, where can you give us a bit of a rundown? And are there any deals to be had, crucially?
Yes. So I think the top cities we're seeing, Istanbul, London, Paris, Barcelona are kind of the typical ones. We're seeing Bangkok has made a really big comeback in Asia, and Riyadh as well in Saudi. But in terms of other European cities, which we're seeing on the rise, so Dublin in Ireland.
Yes, we had the first kid-free getaway to Dublin, and it was fantastic. Great for walking around, great food, hospitality, some great shopping as well. Are there any deals to be had, though?
Yes, so the Irish capital, as you say, known for ancient buildings, historical sites, street art, and famous Irish hospitality.
It almost felt like some kind of living museum. I was there. I was like, is this person really just Irish dancing in the middle of the street? Oh, no, they are. This is happening. I'm not in some kind of like, it's a small world after all. So this is what people do. It was absolutely fantastic. Any hotel recommendations?
Yeah, so we've got an offer at the moment where you can stay 5 nights at the 4-star Alex Hotel Dublin in an executive room with breakfast daily. We have at the moment with all of our summer holidays, kids stay and eat for free, which is included in this one. Also return airport transfers and return economy class flights. So for the 5 nights there, you're looking at 6,470 dirhams per adult, and kids can fly from 3,395 dirhams.
So that is Dublin. Emily Jenkins with us this afternoon from Donata Travel. Taking your questions, Ellen's been in touch saying, I'm looking for a solo trip, late 30s, a relaxing wellness break where I won't feel like a Billy No Mates. So we'll have a look at that. And a question here from Jenna. Thanks, Janet, saying, looking for a great hotel location for the family. Kids are now in their teens and they get bored just sitting on the beach. Any ideas where they can have some fun too? They're 15 and 17. Thank you. We will have a look at that and get back to you as soon as possible. So something that I noticed and I wanted to ask you about actually was Disneyland Paris, because I live very close to Mercato. I was there over the weekend. And could it be too good to be true? You can win to go, please. Is this right?
Yes. So starting from Monday this week and it's running through till Sunday, we have, we've partnered with Disneyland Paris. So there's a bit of bringing some Disney magic to Mercato Mall. So if you head down there, the team is working with like amongst a Disney castle right in the middle of the mall. So there's a couple of options there where you can jump in the wind machine and grab yourself a Mickey and enter the competition that way. Or if you take a photo of yourself in front of the castle and post a selfie to social media, you also enter to win. So the prize we have got is for a family of four going to Disneyland Paris, park tickets included, accommodation, flights, etc. So it's on all week. So if you need any more details, jump onto donatatravel.com, and it's also up on Mercato Mall's website as well and social channels.
That, whoever you are that wins that. Very jealous indeed. I met someone who won a car the other day. You know how you feel like there's always car competitions in Dubai and you're like, yeah, no one actually wins that though. No. I met a woman who won a car at Mercato.
Amazing.
I know. I feel like when you get to 10 years, they should just be like, here's your white Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
We will give you one of the cars that you see at the airport or at the garages by the side of the road. What if you can't wait to actually win, or you're like me and never win a thing in your life?
So, if you can't wait to win and you want to head over to Disneyland Paris for the summer, we have a 4-night holiday option there to stay at the nautical-themed Disney's Newport Bay Club at Disneyland Paris. So you can stay in a superior room with a 4-day Disneyland Paris tickets for the whole family. So the 4-night package includes return airport transfers, return economy class flights, and is priced from 5,930 dirhams per adult and 2,880 dirhams per child under 12 years.
Message from G saying, are these deals available to everyone and what are the booking date specifications? Good question. It's all on donatatravel.com and I'm guessing depends on the package in terms of eligibility for booking and taking the holiday.
I think the biggest thing at the moment that we're seeing is there are a lot of people wanting to travel for summer, mm-hmm. particularly over Eid break in July. So if you want to get away and you want to take advantage of this, get onto booking as soon as possible. You can also call 800 Donata or visit any of our retail outlets if you have questions. But all of these offers are available for the summer holidays.
So I've done a thing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to travel for Eid. But then I realised that if I haven't got something to do on the fitness front, then I do nothing. So for Eid, I'm going to Georgia.
Amazing.
And I'm going to be climbing the highest peak in Georgia, which I think it's called Kazbek. Really must figure that out before I actually go. Have you been to Georgia?
Yes, and I've actually been up to Kazbegi and stayed up there in the middle of winter. It was beautiful. Obviously, I couldn't climb any hills or mountains because there was a lot of snow around and I wasn't there for that either. So
I'm going in July. There's no excuse for me.
Yeah, but it's absolutely a stunning, stunning area. And what I loved the most, while we're going to talk about food tourism at some point, is that in Kazbegi, up in the hills, all of the food is grown locally and it was just beautiful. We stayed at the Rooms Hotel. So if you get a chance to stay there afterwards.
Emily, no. Oh. I'm going to be staying in some mountain hut, and apparently one is a premium hut. And I was like, oh, tell me more about the premium hut, you know, thinking maybe there'll be a hot tub. No, I think it's literally there is a flushing toilet, and this is what makes it premium. But after tents on Kilimanjaro, I'll take a shed on the side of a mountain in
maybe
Georgia.
Maybe you could have a wee break afterwards, because there's definitely hot tubs at the Rooms Hotel in Kazbegi.
Okay, good to know. Has anyone been to Georgia? Let me know. We are going to have some time, I hope, at the beginning and the end. But I think the food compared to what we had on the side of Kilimanjaro is going to be much, much better. If there's banana stew, I will cry. I'll cry, fully cry. Let's go back to some family-friendly holidays. Mentioned earlier about Oman now being very, very easy for getting in and out. And you've got a deal at one of my favourite hotels in the region, the Shangri-La. It's the Al Jisr. Tell us more.
Sure. So this is a great hotel to stay in. I know they've got a lazy river there too, which was good times.
Always. Who doesn't love a lazy river?
We've got 3 nights at the 5-star Shangri-La in a deluxe room with breakfast and return economy class flights. And you're looking at 2,499 dirhams per adult and 1,535 dirhams per child.
Including
under
12. Flights?
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay, there you go. Message here from Ven saying, you mentioned the Maldives earlier not being a top destination, but are there any bargains? Haha. Yes.
Yes, we always. So I did a thing for Eid too and I've booked a trip to the Maldives, but I haven't decided where to stay yet. You know, now that I have a child, there are completely different,
different priorities.
Priorities.
Mm-hmm. Believe me, I know. You're like, oh, a splash pad. Whereas before we were like, oh, God, please tell me it's an adults only pool. Yeah. So we're looking at family friendly here. What have you got? And Van hasn't messaged, said if it's a family or a couples thing, but what's the best deal you've got?
So we have a great option to stay at the 3 nights at the 4-star Oblu Experience Alafushi in an ocean view family room with all inclusive free speedboat transfers and return economy class flights from 6,555 dirhams per adult and 4,325 dirhams per child under 12.
There you go, Ben. Hope that helps.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's actually home and away on the show today. We've got Emily Jenkins joining us from Donata Travel, talking us through some fantastic bargains, the latest headlines and guidelines, and offering up some inspiration that I think this one's going to make our tummy rumble quite considerably. Foodie holidays. I am someone who often prioritises where to go based on what are we going to eat? What can we eat? What's the...
100%.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And you've really put my mind at ease about Georgian food being really good. So thank you for that. My mind immediately goes to Italy. And your colleague, Nathan, was lucky enough to go to what I would say is the ultimate. Can you tell us more?
100%. Italian gastronomy tour. We have... I guess what our recommendation is for 6 amazing restaurants and culinary experiences in Italy as part of quite an epic travel itinerary. So this looks at going to Modena, Florence, Rome, Milan, and it's a 6-night tour that encompasses some of the most famous restaurants in Italy. So one of them, which I think is probably the peak, is in Modena, the main event, as Nathan would call it.
Osteria Francescana?
Yes. So one of the most famous restaurants in Italy, and, you know, it's by the famous 3-star Michelin chef, Massimo Pittura of Torno Sabito.
Our friend.
Yes, our friend.
Given that we've both met him once. He's lovely. It's been in every list in the world. It's consistently in the top 5 of the world's best 50 restaurants for, I'd say, I don't know, forever, over a decade. And if you haven't watched Massimo Pittura on Chef's Table, it is just incredible. He's just brilliant in talking about reviving the Parmesan whole industry, really.
Oh. It's incredible. So, yeah, Nathan absolutely raves about it. So I think one of the things just to note with the 6-night itinerary, which we'll go through the other restaurants, it includes accommodation in centrally located 4-star hotels, breakfast daily, train tickets for all intercity transport, your arrival and departure transfers from all airports and train stations, and then the support and assistance to get bookings at all of these restaurants because many of them have waiting lists. So.
I was just about to say, you'd be lucky for some of them, I think. But I'd also like to point out, Italian trains are awesome. Mm. And I say this as someone who used to get on these really scuzzy kind of North England trains into Newcastle and then even down to London, the East Coast. I was like, this is no way to travel. I once got the train from, was it Rome to somewhere in Austria? And it was like, oh, la la, I feel like I'm on a private jet. Incredible.
And don't you find as well on European trains, everyone's really chatty and talks to you, and that would never happen in the UK.
I mean, they might talk to you, but it might not be very pleasant,
no.
I would say. Okay, so we've got all the kind of infrastructure in place around this. So let's go through the itinerary. Can I just say what an amazing honeymoon this would be?
Yes.
Okay, so where are we going?
So starting off in Milan, we have two restaurants in Milan. So Cittamani, which is Ritu Dalmia's flagship Indian restaurant, which I know is interesting. Yes, but it's using Indian spices matched with Italian produce.
Love the sound of that. Mm-hmm. And Viva is the other. I mean, everyone knows Milan, like, such a capital of food. And another Michelin star restaurant. So, okay. And then we're going to Moderna to hang out with Massimo, yes, hopefully. Yep. Florence next.
Yes. So Enotica Pintori has been a jewel in Florence's crown for many years. So this is owned by a restaurateur, Giorgio Pintori, and executive chef Annie Fielde. I'm not sorry about my pronunciation.
I don't think Annie's listening, so I think we're okay, Annie, don't worry.
So it was the first restaurant in the world with a female head chef,
hey,
to be awarded with 3 Michelin stars. So,
love the sound of that. Good job, Annie. And then presumably we're going to go to Rome.
Yeah, so this restaurant is on the top of the Waldorf Astoria in Rome and has phenomenal views right out across Rome. So this is La Pergola by Heinz Beck. Yeah, again, located within this amazing hotel, part of an exclusive collection of the Waldorf Astoria. And they said the restaurant and the hotel share one common philosophy, which is about perfection and service. So
Heinz Beck obviously has a relationship with Waldorf Astoria because he has his restaurant on the Palm here. And I don't say this lightly, probably one of the best desserts I've ever had in my life. I think it was called something like Raspberry 9 Ways, and it was absolutely unbelievable. Right. What are we talking? Are we talking honeymoon prices or maybe a little bit less?
So, yeah, so as I said, so the 6-night itinerary, your accommodation, centrally located 4-star hotels, breakfast daily, train tickets, arrival and departure transfers, support and assistance in obviously getting all of these hotel reservations booked, and your return economy class flights, you're looking at 10,885 dirhams per person. That doesn't include your restaurant bills, though, at these restaurants. making sure that you're aware of that.
All the risotto you can eat.
Exactly.
No, that fits to you. I have to say, there are worse ways to spend 10,000 dirhams. Mm. I mean, that is a once-in-a-lifetime trip.
Phenomenal.
So if you want information on that, of course, you can get in touch with us on 4001. Donata Travel is the website. We've got time to go to Ellen's message saying, looking for a solo trip, maybe a relaxing retreat or wellness, but somewhere I won't feel like a billy no-mates. Any recommendations?
Yes, so our recommendation for this is to go to Bali.
Oh, yes, Ellen, go to Bali.
So there is a great offer in Bali to stay at the Alila. So 7 nights with breakfast daily, return economy for class flights with Emirates, and you get 30% off the hotel. So we're looking there for, it's 9,995 dirhams for a single solo traveller. And they have a full wellness schedule there at the Alila. So they do yoga, tai chi, meditation, etc. So great option.
I would love to go on a holiday where you come back and you don't feel like you need another holiday. That sounds like one. Okay, Ellen, enjoy yourself if that's the one you book. And Jenna, we're going to squeeze this in. Jenna's looking for a great hotel or location. Kids are now in their teens. They get bored just sitting on the beach. Any good ideas where they can have some fun too? They are 15 and 17.
So, I mean, you could do Disneyland Paris that we talked about earlier. You could do a day at the park and then go somewhere else. But actually, I think looking at a cruise is a really great option. So we have some awesome itineraries for cruise across Europe. And the cool thing with that is obviously you get to go to lots of different destinations and get to experience what's happening in each of those cities. But then on top of that, these cruise ships are like a destination in themselves. You've got nightly entertainment, you've got shows. I mean, some of them have hydro slides and racing cars and all sorts of things that teenagers could do. And obviously being on board ship, you would know that they couldn't roam too far.
Get into some trouble, but maybe not too much. Make some friends. That's what you want to do when you're 15 and 17, not hang out with your mum and dad. No offence, Jenna. Thank you so much, Emily, for all of this. This, as I said, everything's on donatatravel.com and a whole lot more. We didn't even touch on UAE staycations, but there's plenty on there as well. So if you are looking to go local, they've got deals at the Centara and Fujairah and the Palm as well. Plus, as I said, all over the world too. Emily, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. you for having me, Helen.
We'll talk to you very soon. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.